Well, my decentralization manifesto broadcast from yesterday most definitely generated a lot of reaction, a lot of commentary, most of it positive, some of it critical, which is usually the case. Brought up a few questions that I think deserve some additional explanation here. And there are also some loose ends that I kind of neglected to tie up. So let me start with that. I mentioned in that broadcast there are basically three groups that are vying for control over the future of money, which will be digital, unless we have a total collapse scenario, in which case it will be silver and seeds. But assuming we still have a functioning power grid, we'll have a functioning internet, and that means the future of money will be digital. There are three groups vying for control. Group number one are the central banks, CBDCs, you know, the governments and the banks of the world. The banksters, they want to have total control. Group number two are what I'm just going to call the Bitcoin group, which is centralized cryptocurrency. I will explain that here in a second. That's one of the points where some people disagreed. Some people said, oh no, Bitcoin is decentralized. Not really. Well, I'll explain that in a minute. And then the third group is the true decentralization advocates and pioneers. That's the new upcoming group that I'm really excited about, that are creating structures that cannot be gamed by people with large amounts of money or people with large amounts of computing power or large amounts of political influence or anything of that kind. So these three groups want to have control, and the future of humanity depends on who wins this game. Well, I'm calling it a game, but it's way more serious than that. Now, this is about whether humanity is enslaved for, you know, centuries to come, if we even survive that long, or whether we're going to be free and set ourselves free from the authoritarian tyrants that are in charge of everything right now. So I believe that the fiat currency systems of the world are going to collapse. A lot of that is because there's a controlled demolition underway, and they want to then use that collapse to usher people or corral people into the central bank digital currencies. Competing with that are the more institutional cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, run by, frankly, just a lot of rich people, for the most part, and, you know, Lightning Network layer on top of that, and they don't want to see any more innovation in that space because it could take away from them, you see. So this is a territorial battle. And then the new emerging, truly decentralized pioneers that are not interested in just money per se, but rather interested in living in a world where freedom and liberty prevail, where power is restored to the people through massive decentralization of money, information, news, transactions, commerce, ideas, you know, debate, elections, everything. The more decentralization we have, even with the food supply, the better off we are as a species. So as the fiat currency collapses, and I probably neglected to explain all this yesterday, but as the fiat currency collapses, the off-ramps are going to be very limited. You won't be able to really use your fiat currency once the collapse is underway, because it'll be too late at that point. The banks will have the bail-ins or the freezes or the limitations on the withdrawals that are already being talked about. So the only off-ramps that will function are off-ramps that you invoke before the collapse takes place, which means you have to trust your analysis. You have to trust your conclusions and take action before the crowd takes action, because the crowd will be too late. The crowd will be, you know, screwed, basically. The crowd will lose almost everything, as usually happens in currency collapses throughout history. But the off-ramps right now are pretty limited. So what can you get with fiat that will hold value? What can you get with fiat that's also mobile, that you could use, you know, anywhere in the world if you had to become an economic refugee or a political refugee from the United States? Because believe me, that will happen. So the number of options is pretty limited. And I've talked about all these things over the years, you know, gold and silver and land and ammo and seeds and whatever, diesel fuel, power tools, tractors, you know, physical goods. But all those require physical space. They're very difficult to take with you. You can carry a certain amount of gold, but, you know, maybe not a life's supply of savings. So that would still, you know, if you saved $500,000 in gold, you know, that could still add up quite a lot and might be, you know, might be difficult to carry around without being noticed. And you sure don't want to carry around a lifetime saving supply of silver. You know, that would be very, very heavy and bulky, and you'd get robbed in no time. So I have been a strong advocate of the idea of gold and silver backed cryptos. The challenge with such a project is, you know, what if governments go to the vaults and steal the gold? They just send the military in and take the gold and take the silver. In essence, the problem is also privacy. If it's a public blockchain, then your wallet, if you start to make transactions, your wallet becomes exposed, and then there will be an accounting of who has how much gold and silver on the chain, potentially. So once I began to realize this, it's when I understood that privacy is the key critical factor of any kind of transactional system that can hold value, and it has to express value through its utility, not speculation. So like you, you know, I grew sick and tired of hearing everybody talk about, you know, Bitcoin's going to go to the moon and you should sell everything and buy Bitcoin. And you know, it was all in all these crap coins and Dogecoin and whatever. It was always about just, oh, everybody, you're going to make billions of dollars and just jump in now. It was very Ponzi-esque, right? It was very shady in so many ways. And it was a big turnoff to a lot of us who operate on, you know, high integrity principles of transparency and real value and, you know, things being real. But utility is also real. Well, one of the things that I have learned recently in dealing with the banks and dealing with trying to help people and make donations even, look, I'm not going to go into full details of what I do to help, you know, with donations and money and so on. But I found that crypto was the best way to send money to people who needed it. Okay. Bottom line. And sometimes crypto was also the best way to send money for transactions of purchasing things. The banking system has become a nightmare. They've cracked down like crazy. They've limited everything. They're so security-minded. It's to a fault at this point. They basically don't want you to use your money. And they don't even consider it to be your money, by the way. They lay claim to your money. You become a creditor the minute you deposit in the bank. So crypto, I have personally experienced crypto as having remarkable utility in the last several months. Utility that cannot be matched by banks, and that, frankly, the banking system will only make worse as, you know, more and more crackdowns and bail-ins and bank freezes and holidays all kick in. Crypto cannot be shut down by the government because it is, at least at some level, decentralized, even though my argument is that Bitcoin is way too centralized for my comfort level. But there are other projects that are truly decentralized, and their utility, without speculation, their utility is amazing. And their utility is something that I'm personally experiencing and taking advantage of. And I am sending money to people using crypto. And it makes me feel a sense of relief to know that, wow, I can do this really privately. Like no bank, no government, no treasury official, nobody can know that I'm sending money to these people or for what purpose I'm sending this money. Because frankly, it's none of their freaking business. If I choose to support some person that I think is doing good work in the world and they need some money to make it through, that's my business, right? It's my own personal money. It's not even company money. It's just my own personal money. Or if I choose to buy something, you know, like a VPN service, or if I choose to buy, you know, preparedness supplies or ammunition using cryptocurrency, it's nobody's business. It's just my own business. I don't want the government snooping into what I'm doing with my credit card or with my bank or whatever. And by the way, I did buy another rifle just recently, and unfortunately there was not a crypto option to purchase this rifle. And I wish there were. I wish I could buy firearms using cryptocurrency. It's not illegal to do so. I would still go through an FFL, obviously. I still have my concealed carry, obviously. I've still passed all the background checks and so on. I'm not a felon and so on and so forth. It's legal for me to own these firearms. I just want to pay for them using crypto because it's nobody's business what I'm buying. that I'm going to have this new rifle, which in this case, by the way, is a SIG MCX 7.62x51. I'll tell you about it later. I'm a big fan of the SIG line of MCX rifles, and I don't know, the 5.56 is just too tiny for me. I don't know, it's just too small. It's just pew pew pew. You know, I need something a little more robust. Nevertheless, that's a different podcast. So I am experiencing the utility of crypto without speculation, because I'm not a speculator and I don't recommend speculation, and I will never recommend speculation because I'm not into Ponzi's and all that garbage. I'm saying the utility of it has the value. What if there's a system that just has value because of its utility, because it allows you to do the things that I'm talking about, to transact, to send money, to receive money, to move it across borders in a private way, purely private, that nobody can snoop, nobody can track your wallet history, nobody can know everything that you ever bought from that wallet, which they can with Bitcoin. If you go in with Bitcoin and you buy a cup of coffee with BTC, somebody can look up the whole history of everything you've ever bought with that wallet, the entire history from all time, you know, since the beginning of when you had the wallet. That's not privacy. And frankly, on the decentralization issue, how many people do you know who are mining Bitcoin? Almost nobody. Because all the mining is done by these centralized companies that have these big, you know, couple hundred million dollar investments and big mining rig farms at, you know, special cooling centers at certain areas of the world where electricity is cheap. And like, you and I can't really participate meaningfully in Bitcoin mining. So it's not decentralized. End of debate. And how many people are actually running a Bitcoin node? You know, how many people have the full local wallet blockchain? And not that many. And certainly not on mobile devices, because the blockchain is too big to fit on most mobile devices. Most people are using nodes somewhere else, hosted by someone else, someone that they have to trust. So it's a trusted system, which means there's an element of centralization. Most people are using exchanges, which are just like crypto banks, regulated by the federal government, controlled by the feds. They answer to the feds. They'll send your details to the feds at the drop of a hat. They're not protecting your privacy. They're not decentralized. They're fully centralized. Yeah, Coinbase, I'm talking about you. So a truly decentralized system would have to allow everyday people to participate in mining in whatever way that mining works, you know, proof of work, proof of stake, proof of time, proof of hardware, whatever, proof of identity, I don't know. Whatever way your mining works, it's got to be available to everyday people. Can't just be super special, super rich people who can just buy more video cards and more hardware. That's not fair to everyday people. And it's not decentralized. And then people need to be able to run full nodes. The nodes have to be, you know, small enough that can fit on people's laptops and home computers, whether it's a Mac or a Windows system or whatever. But it's got to be something where everyday people can participate in the full nodes. And Bitcoin is not that. Bitcoin is too bloated. The blockchain isn't even efficient. It's got essentially no privacy. It's not decentralized. Everyday people aren't mining it. Nobody's running, or very few people are running full nodes. You know, I'm sorry. Look, Bitcoin has its place, but it's not a privacy coin and it's not decentralized. So if we're going to solve the problems of the world, we've got to stop this centralization of power, especially power over money, commerce, and transactions and contracts and all these things. And, you know, even Ethereum is not decentralized. Ethereum is highly centralized in the hands of the few, especially its own founders, by the way. So decentralization is the answer to so many of our problems. But achieving that decentralization is going to take new technology that's vastly improved, by the way, something very different and much better than Bitcoin. And I'm not talking about just money. I'm talking about content and publishing and all these things as well, content distribution through peer-to-peer decentralized systems. So, hey, the world that you know is collapsing. We can build a new world, but not order, not a new world order. We can build a new world of the people, a new world that is decentralized, that is organic, that is built from the bottom up, grassroots. We can build that world, and frankly, the tech exists to do it. So that's what I wanted to get across yesterday. Thanks for listening. Mike Adams here, The Health Ranger, naturalnews.com and brighteon.com.